Hello, podcast listeners. You are now listening to the Lifebook Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan River, and I want to thank you for tuning in today. Financial month, ever powerful, ever present financial month, coming at you. We have some great guests today. Rachel and Bruce from The Money Advantage are on the line. How are you guys doing?
Awesome. Thanks for having us today.
Good morning, Jordan. Good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, great to be here, guys. I loved coming on your show, and I figured we got to return the favor. It's financial month, after all. I'm loving what The Money Advantage is doing, loving the podcast. Why don't you tell my listeners what you do at The Money Advantage and where they can find you?
That's awesome. Well, I'll kick us off on that. We are a company that really helps people understand their power financially and really being able to take back control, increase their cash flow, and be in a position where they're not just trusting that someone else is going to lead them into the financial destiny that they want for themselves. Really being able to take that ownership and be in financial control. So we help people with cash flow strategies, really increasing their cash flow, using infinite banking and alternative investments. And we are a company that really believes that you are the best person to be in financial control of your life.
I love that. And how did you get started and when did you get started?
Well, we started the Money Advantage podcast about a little over 2 years ago. And that was really a reason that we wanted to educate people and have a platform to provide more detailed information than just what I could do through video. And so I called up Bruce, actually my husband did, and said, hey, would you be willing to be on a podcast with Rachel? And this kind of started growing and we had people reaching out to us and saying, hey, how can you help? And so we ended up incorporating and we're able to serve people and help them through really increasing their cash flow and being in financial control on an ongoing basis, one-on-one.
I love that.
Do a lot of consulting.
So Jordan, what happened was, is that even before that, how we met was that after the financial crisis, we actually tried to look back and figure out, when I say we, I work for a group in St. Louis called E3 Consultants Group. And we tried to look back after the financial recession in 2008-09, and we said, who actually weathered the storm the best? And we actually saw that a lot of these universities that had these large endowments actually weathered the storm very, very well. And one of the reasons is that they had alternative investments. And when we say alternative investments, we say anything that is not stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. So things like a real estate investment trust, oil and gas programs, and cash valued life insurance. Well, we had been doing cash valued life insurance for years, and we didn't think people were having a good enough education on this. And we noticed that there were other people across the United States that were starting to jump on this educational platform. One was being Kim Butler and Todd Lankford, and then Garrett Gunderson, some of your listeners may have heard of before, and then just a variety of other people. And Kim, we started to decide, hey, we need to just get these financial professionals together, you know, to make sure we're all on the same page. And we started a movement called the Freedom Advisors Movement. And the freedom was the freedom to actually express a different way of thinking. And that's how I met Rachel and Lucas through that. And we actually, we were like-minded and we started sharing. And then one day through all that, Lucas calls me up and says, hey, we have this idea. Would you like to join us on that? So that was a little backstory of how we actually met.
I think that everyone needs to go subscribe to the podcast. It's a great show, and you two have some great chemistry on air. So I love it, man. I love these financial podcasts. When you're in the right mood and you want to listen to a podcast, but you don't want to just listen to a comedian, you know, like wax poetic, you want to actually learn something. Loving the Money Advantage podcast. So everybody go check that out and subscribe today. Rachel, did you have something you want to say there? I feel like I cut you off.
No, you didn't cut me off, but I love that you are promoting the podcast. And what's really interesting is that like-mindedness Bruce is talking about really is what brought us together to meet Bruce and his team in the first place and really trying to figure out how do we get this education out to as many people as possible because it's so, so valuable. So this is going to be another continuation of that today as we talk with you.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Love providing Lifebook members with this kind of value. And look for my episode coming up on the Money Advantage podcast. I do a little rapping about poker and game theory optimization. It's really, really fun. Let's jump into financial life. Let's jump into the financial category here. You guys have talked to a lot of people. You've done hours and hours on financial struggles, financial challenges. What, in your opinions, are the biggest or most common oversights in people's financial category of their life?
That's a very insightful question. I think it comes down to what Rachel and I always talk about is the lack of control of your money. But then you got to dig even deeper. So Jordan, we kid around a lot. You know, I don't think people think about most things in their lives because we're so busy and we live in time-starved environments. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that then they don't think about why they think a certain way. So you got to think about your thinking. Mm. So when a person is saying, why am I not doing better, or I'm stressing out by my financial life, I really believe it's because we don't make it a precedent to understand about money. Now, why? Then you have to say to yourselves, well, why don't we make it a precedent? Well, I think we're moving in our country, we're moving to a place, and I'm going to get on my soapbox here, Jordan.
So, please, yes.
I think we're moving into a place where we're not taking responsibility. Every generation is taking less and less responsibility because we're automating things. Well, when you automate things such as a 401k or some kind of government program like Social Security, people say, well, I don't have to take care of my financial life because my corporation is doing it or the government's doing it. So I really don't have to take care of my financial life. Mm-hmm. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, the government continues to overspend. We're actually going to lessen the payouts of Social Security. They only have enough money to pay out 75% of the benefits by the year 2032 or 33, depending on which way they do their accounting. So, and then don't take my word for it. Look, Google it. You'll find it. It's actually on the statements that you get from the Social Security Administration. And then you have the downturn that happens in 2008, and people say, oh, whoa, wait a minute. Maybe my 401k is not going to provide the kind of benefit I thought it was going to provide me. Mm-hmm. So I just think we've been taught like a bunch of lemmings to actually just follow the crowd because that's the institutions that we respect, corporations and government, which I'm not sure why we want to respect both of those. But that's what the normal people do. They say, hey, I'm being taken care of. So there's a lack of awareness and people think they don't have to take, you know, responsibility. So
wow.
I think that's the biggest thing that's problematic right now is people are not thinking about their thinking.
Yeah, and I'll just take off of that. I mean, I think just it's easier to go with the status quo and do what everyone else around you is doing than to stop in the middle of that and really say, okay, let me think about what do I actually want to create? Because it's just easier to go with the flow and not make ripples, not make change, not do something differently because that takes a lot of effort to question the status quo, to question 100%. The system, to question, you know, what everyone else is doing and saying. And so I think we have amnesia in some ways when we forget about the downturn that's happened before. We forget about, you know, 2008. We forget about the dot-com crash before that. We forget about all of these different sections of time in our history where people thought they were doing the right thing and then the financial rug was jerked out from underneath them. And we realized that what we're doing is not putting us in that position of control. So then it can lead into saying, well, hey, this person made a lot of money in this particular stock, or this was a flashy investment over here. I'm just going to go copy someone else's strategy. And I think what really ends up happening is we follow strategies or we follow a certain product or we get on a product bandwagon instead of really understanding the principles of real wealth creation that are behind all of that. And that does take a lot of work and a lot of thinking about your thinking, like you said, Bruce.
Jordan, Rachel's exactly, I mean, she's actually saying what I just said in a different way, which is why she's so good. See, what happens is when somebody says, well, and follows the status quo, well, then when something doesn't go right, like when the stock market dropped in 2008, 9, 10, or well, maybe not early 10, then people could say, well, it wasn't just me that lost money. Everybody lost money. So I can't be responsible for this.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I have clients who have said that or have come to me and said, well, you know, yeah, I lost money, but everybody lost money. And I said, and I can honestly look across the desk from them and say, I didn't lose any money. And then they're like, what? You didn't? How did you not lose any money? And I say, well, that's because I didn't have any money in the stock market. Well, then how are you preparing for the future? Well, I'm preparing for the future by building a business, have real estate investments. I have cash flowing assets, and the assets and the money that I put somewhere else, I put it in somewhere where you cannot lose money.
Wow.
Then you get the casino attitude that Rachel was talking about, where people, when they go to a casino, you only hear about people that win money.
Yes.
You know, my buddies go to casino and they say, yeah, I won $300 last night at the casino. And the only other time you hear something is people say, yeah, I went to the casino, I broke even, which we know that's not true. You can't break even, and you can only win. We never hear about the times people lose money. It's the same way in the stock market, because people don't lean over the fence to their next door neighbor and tell them how much they lost in a stock.
Wow.
They only lean over the fence, talk to the next door neighbor about how much they made in a stock. Well, then people start to thinking, well, everybody's making money in the stock market, I should get in the stock market. So,
wow.
Rachel, once again, did a great job of summarizing what I normally say.
Well, I don't know. There was a lot of good points there, you guys. I feel like we're 12 minutes in on question one. I feel like you guys are chock full of answers. I mean, we might have to do like a follow-up or a part two or a money advantage extension or something here.
No, you're good.
No, it's okay.
Jordan, that's great, because, you know, I have a tendency to go on and on and on, because I've been doing this for a long time, and I just want to share everything that I've learned from my clients. I tell people all the time, it's not that I know everything, but I've sat down with over 4,600 different meetings. And so I just pass along what has worked and what hasn't worked for people.
Well, I've done a lot of financial interviews, and your answer to my question, which was essentially my question being, what is the biggest and most common oversight? Your answer was education and personal responsibility, which is an answer mm-hmm. that I probably have not heard before. And that's something we're all about at Lifebook, by the way. That's what we're all about, you know, getting crystal clear on that. And that really helps when it comes to your financial vision. But why do you think so many, and you know, this might be a double answer here, to be honest, personal responsibility and education might be the answer to this question too. But why do you think so many people work so hard and spin their wheels and still live in financial lack? You know, we talk about working smarter, not harder. I see a lot of people working really, really hard and still being in financial lack. What's that all about?
I'm going to take this one here from this point, because it really ties right into what we were just talking about. And I would almost want to say this to anyone who's listening. You are not the only person who feels behind. You're probably, if you were truly honest and said what you feel about your financial life, you would look around and everyone else, if they were also honest, really feels the same way. And I would say it's really not your fault, which sounds like I'm making it not about your responsibility, but there's so much teaching around us, so many messages that cause a lot of confusion. Mm. And when you look behind those messages, this is something Bruce and I talk about all the time, you have to wonder, what is the motive of the person who is telling me this? So when I hear, you should pay off all your debt as quickly as possible, who is that message coming from and how does it benefit them? Well, if it's your mortgage company or a financial institution who has extended your credit to you and they want you to pay off your debt as quickly as possible, well, wouldn't that make sense then that your cash flow is flowing into their control so then they have control of your capital?
Right.
Now, so you want to be asking those questions. And when you hear things like, well, just always invest in your 401k, stay in it for the long haul, never pull your money out. If it's an up market or a down market, just keep your money invested. Who's that benefiting? Well, is it benefiting the fund manager that's getting guaranteed fees on whether your money goes up or down in value because it's invested with them? So you want to listen to what's behind that message. And I think a lot of times there is this typical teaching that is status quo all around us that's not teaching us how to be in prosperity. It's not teaching us how to be in control and gaining cash flow and really creating the financial future that we want. And so this is just kind of a difference between the typical thinking and prosperity economics. Typical thinking would say, just trust someone else. They have your best interest at heart. Just trust the people who are financial experts and they're going to lead you in the right direction. Mm. Whereas prosperity thinking would say, you're the best person to be in control. The typical thinking would say, just accumulate money and hope that it's going to grow and that you're going to be able to live off the interest. And prosperity thinking would say, you really need to create cash flow. You need cash flow for today and cash flow for tomorrow. And when you listen to the difference, it's so common that we're hearing this typical thinking from every different angle, getting all of our cash flow and getting our mindset to do what is in the best interest of other people, banks, financial institutions, And frankly, it takes away our control.
That's a really great answer.
Rachel, I have so many things going through my mind. You're absolutely 100% correct again. I think what happens here, Jordan, is just like when you do stuff with Lifebook, is a lot of it seems very, very obvious.
Yes.
How we want to structure our lives. I'm not just talking about financially, but I'm talking about emotionally, spiritually. However, it seems to be obvious. But because our lives have become so much intertwined with all these different things, whether it be children, relationships, parents, your job, now people are starting to step back and start saying, how am I giving back to the world? What's my legacy? Mm-hmm. And there's so much going on, they don't even know where to start. Well, that's what Lifebook's so great about it, is actually giving them a path to run on. And so it's the same way in the financial life, but I challenge people to say, okay, you want to get your spiritual life together, you want to get your emotional life together, you want to get your parental life together. All those things start with a mindset. Mm-hmm. And we talk about this all the time. What is your mindset? Is your mindset that you're just going to get up one of these days and you're going to say, I'm going to start taking control of what I believe is the most important thing, and that is to determine my ability from this day or forward, how I'm going to live my life, whether it's emotionally, spiritually, or financially. I mean, Rachel and I just did a session with a person who decided, he was a chiropractor, and he decided that he and his wife weren't doing all that well, and they decided, we're just going to ask this simple question every time, how is it serving us? Mm-hmm. Whenever they had to make a decision, they just said, how's it serving us? And I think that's a great thing for your listeners to determine what they're doing financially, is just saying, how is this serving us? Now, supposedly the government and the regulators, the SEC and FINRA, the Financial Regulatory Authority, they say as long as you're talking to a fiduciary, that's the big buzzword now, and a fiduciary is somebody that's supposed to have your best interest in mind, not theirs. Mm-hmm. And so people say, well, I'm talking to a fiduciary, I shouldn't have to worry about it. They have my best interest in mind. And I tell people all the time, I wouldn't go by whether they're certified a fiduciary or not. I'd go by what they actually do, because we can have certified doctors, we can have certified lawyers, we can have all these certifications in our lives, but we actually have to be watching what they actually do. Oh, and by the way, I'm a fiduciary, by the way, also. But I tell people that all the time. Don't take my certification, take by what we actually do in our lives. Mm-hmm. So that's what I think people need to actually focus on when they're trying to think about where they're getting information.
I love it, man. It's powerful stuff. And I have a lot to say, but I'm just going to move on because I want more from you guys. So
let me
ask you, how do you guys take the guesswork out of financial decision-making? Like you said, it's very confusing when people tell you different things. It's very confusing when people tell you different things and you see multiple things work, seemingly contradictory things. So how can we forge our own path? How can we not guess our way through financial decisions?
Yeah. So here's the thing. You have to be, as a person that is trying to get information from somebody, you first have to say, this used to drive me crazy. You know, you turn on the Today Show or Good Morning America, and at the end of the year, they'd have some kind of financial expert on. Well, there's about 320 million Americans. And this person is now telling 320 million Americans. Now, I know there's some of these are children, but they're telling all these millions of Americans what they should do before the end of the year,
right,
to minimize taxes or to set themselves up for the next year. Well, I mean, for gosh sakes, that would be like having a doctor on and saying, okay, now I haven't looked at you at all.
But take these medications.
All your vitals. Right. But do this. Take these medications.
All of you.
Yeah, all of you. You all need the same stuff. So what we do at the Money Advantage, and I challenge everybody to do this, what you have to do is you have to look at money that's flowing into your control. You have to document that money flowing into your control. Most people don't know how much money's flowing in their control. Mm. Then they have to document how much money's flowing out of their control. Then they have to have somebody, hopefully they can teach themselves to do this, but have somebody to coach them to figure out how to have more of that strategy, more of that money flow into their control. Mm-hmm. The end result, they'll have more money to utilize not only today, but in any opportunity that comes up in their lifetime. And so it's really that simple. Figure out how much money's flowing in your control, how much money is flowing out of your control, then have somebody that can help you strategize until you get up to that educational ability to figure that out, strategize to get more of that money flowing into your control. And you do that by taking a complete financial picture, a complete cash flow awareness. Now, your listeners might think, well, you're talking about budgeting. I'm not talking about budgeting, because budgeting is a bad word in our mind, because budget tells you about what you can't have. Okay, I can't have that latte. Okay, but because that's a negative connotation. We like to take it on a positive connotation. If you know where your money's flowing, then you can decide whether you want to have that latte or not. It's flipping the mindset. It's not what I can't have, it's what I'm choosing to have.
Oh, I love that.
So yeah, so that's the way I think people can, the first thing that they can do to really start taking control of their own life. Yes.
I love it.
Yeah. And taking that guesswork out, Bruce, is what you're saying, what flows in, what flows out, really the difference between those two is just simply cash flow. So if you have, you know, $300,000 coming in each year and $300,000 is flowing right back out the back door, that's zero cash flow. And so then you want to say, how do I keep more of this money that I'm making? How do I then protect that money? And then how do I take what I am keeping, take my cash flow that I have from today and put that to work in cash flowing assets, things like businesses and real estate, so that it makes more money, so that I have income today from assets and income in the future. So really that all boils down to cash flow and control, which again, you could say, well, those are really the principles. If you really want to be in a position of financial control and take the guesswork out of financial decision-making, if you come back to the principles, say, how do I have cash flow and control, and use that as a almost like an internal GPS or a guidance system to make all your decisions, it will really put you head and shoulders above everyone else.
Absolutely love it. And we're going to get into some high leverage financial strategies in just a second here, but I want to dig into some more generalized stuff and get some of your meta wisdom about finances. So what do you see as the number one obstacle to financial freedom?
I would say really that it comes down to not having that cash flow. So there are so many times that people would say, well, you know, all I need to do is just make more money and it's going to solve all of the problems that I have today. And when I get more money, more income, then I will be able to pay off all my debts, and then I'll be able to save for the future, and then I'll be able to invest the way I want to. And
you're talking to someone who has all those thoughts. That's exactly where I'm at. I feel like I just need more income. And I think that can kind of be a loop, feedback loop, but you tell me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that if you look at all of the people that maybe are in that income bracket that you might aspire to, that might be one step ahead of you, and maybe they have the boat that you really want, or they have the vacations that you're saying, hey, if I just get to that higher income level, then I'll be able to have this lifestyle and be able to set myself up for the future. The real challenge is that you look at most people all across the board are living up to their means. What I mean by that is that just making more money doesn't mean that you're going to keep more.
Yes.
Usually what happens is the spending goes up with that. And it comes back to something called Parkinson's Law. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
It's a simple law. And really what it says is that basically if you have your income increase, then your expenses rise to meet that. It's almost like our money is the same as our time. It's this vacuum. If you have 5 hours to complete a project, you're going to probably use those 5 hours. If you had 30 minutes to do the same thing, you're probably going to use the full 30 minutes, right?
Interesting.
And it's interesting that it happens in the same way with our time, or it happens the same way with our money, that if we had $100,000 to spend, we're probably going to spend it all. If we have $300,000 to spend, we're probably going to spend all of that as well. And as the income rises, then we just see, well, then my desire for what I have in my life, my lifestyle, is going to rise to meet that.
It seems to, yeah.
Yeah. And it's human nature. I mean, it's not something that you're faulted for being, you know, having a personal character defect if you're in a position where you want to spend all the money you make. We all are in that position where we desire more and we want more. We want a better life than we have currently. But the problem is not that we don't make enough money. It's that we don't have enough cash flow, which means that we're not keeping enough of the money that we make. Because if we keep it, then we can control that part of the money that we're keeping. We can figure out what we want to do with that to create the life that we want. So it's really about increasing the cash flow. And now again, this kind of comes back to what Bruce was talking about, how much money is coming in and how much money is flowing out. The problem is we think that all of the money flowing out is benefiting our lives. Like it's our mortgage payment, it's our the clothes we buy, it's going to Starbucks, it's all the vacations and the eating out that we do. It's paying for kids' dance and sports. But it's not just those expenses. It's really this money that you also have that's seeping out of your control. It's like it's sifting through your fingers. It's things like taxes or interest, opportunity costs. And these are more of the intangibles, but we see a lot of money being lost in that area where it's not improving and benefiting your life. And a lot of those financial decisions are made because we think we're doing what's best for us financially, but it's actually taking money out of our control.
Mm. Yeah, Jordan. And here's the thing. We're trying to educate you so well that you can be the best financial advisor that you can hire. You're hiring yourself as a financial advisor. But the fact of the matter is that everybody needs coaches. I mean, that's kind of, I think Lifebook is coaching people how to live their life. And even great entertainers, the people that are the most efficient and prosperous people on this planet have coaches. They have life coaches. They have financial coaches. They have health coaches. Everybody. And why is that? Because, yeah, why is that? Well, the reason it is because human nature, you tend to get complacent. You have what's called the arrival syndrome. Mm-hmm. So you make more money. You think, oh, now I can have everything I want. But then you desire more. So then you make more money and you're like, oh, I have everything I want. So there, you just think you have arrived and you don't have to learn anything else. Well, coaches, though, will actually help you get out of that arrival system and teach you how to be an even better version of yourself going forward, which includes financial literacy.
God, I love it. Let's see, what can we go to next? I want to skip ahead a little bit. Talk to me about hidden money leaks and where you see people leaking money out of their wealth.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that we are really excited about in a way because often people don't see. I mean, obviously, if it's hidden or if it's undiscovered or it's this secret money leak, then you probably don't know you have it. If you did know that you had this money leak, you wouldn't have it anymore. And then you would have more cash in your control. And so a lot of the times, what we see is people have certain areas. I mentioned things like taxes or interest. Let's just dig into a couple of those for a second.
Mm-hmm, please.
So tax, for instance, if you are in a position that you own a business, you have a lot more advantages and leeway with the tax code to be able to take steps that are in your favor. Even as an employee, you still do have ways that you can leverage the tax code in your favor, especially if you own real estate or you own any share of a business. But what you want to do is you really want to say, how can I pay the minimum tax, not only this year, but every year going forward in the future? Which means, how can I legally pay the littlest amount possible in taxes? And this is something that I think a lot of people are afraid to touch and they're afraid to talk about or explore because they say, hey, I don't want to end up in IRS tax court. I don't want to have an audit. I don't want to do anything that borders on illegal.
Really messed up if you think about it, that people are scared of that just to try to, you know, maximize their own wealth and they're scared of going to jail for it.
Right. And what's interesting is that the tax code is gigantic.
Yeah.
But most of the tax code is not telling you all these ways you can't save in taxes. Most of it is telling you all the ways that you can save in taxes. And I know that Bruce has a great way that he talks about this in terms of how you're providing goods and services to the economy. Do you want to share on that for a second, Bruce?
Well, yeah, this is a bad money leak. First of all, I've actually attended seminars with IRS agents, former IRS agents, and they have informed us that 5% of the tax code is written about how you pay taxes, and 95% of the tax code is about how you don't have to pay the taxes. And we have a tax department here at E3, and they say the same thing. I'm sure, Jordan, you've heard people say things like, well, those are just loopholes. That bothers me when people say loopholes. If you talk to the IRS, they never use the word loophole. What they use is the word incentive. So the IRS through Congress have put in incentives in the tax code to actually help the country. Now, we could argue all day long whether some of these things are helping the country or not.
Right, but that's the intent.
That's the intent. There are legal incentives to actually do something with your money to actually so that you don't pay more taxes or mm-hmm. you pay even less taxes so then somebody else prospers.
Right.
You know, I can just give you a couple. Well, real estate's one of them. You know, so to spur the growth of real estate, there's some tax incentives to actually invest in real estate. Now, what does that do? Well, it not only do you have a hard asset by actually building something and putting people to work, but then all the ancillary things that go along with real estate, you know, the refrigerators, the ranges, the dishwashers, the flooring, all this stuff that you put inside mm-hmm. the real estate mm-hmm. is actually also spurring the economy. So it's an incentive to do that. And that's just one example. And then you can actually structure your business to actually do real estate, even if you're a W-2 employee. So that's one of the money leaks that we see all the time is people say, oh, I don't want to do that because I don't want the IRS in my life. Well, the reason the IRS has this reputation is because they don't have enough people to police all of the people filing taxes. So they have this aura about them that they frankly put out there to put fear in it so that people actually run the straight and narrow. Mm-hmm. But it's actually at a disadvantage on their end. And that's not what the tax code was set up by Congress to do. So yeah, they're actually hurting themselves.
What's really interesting about this is that you want to be working with a CPA who loves the tax code and who really understands it really well so that they can help you use the best tax strategy for you. I just want to give you a quick example. I was working with someone who had done an angel investment. They'd invested in a company and they used a promissory note. And so the company then had agreed, and it was all in legal documentation, where the company would then pay 10% of profits to the investor as their income grew. Sounded like a great idea, except the investor thought he was getting passive income, thought he was going to be taxed not as regular income on this money. What ended up happening is he was taxed at regular income levels, and he was looking at, well, as the company grows and prospers, which is what you want your investments to do, to grow and increase and improve, what was happening is his income was going to be rising higher and higher, going in higher tax brackets, and he was going to be paying a lot of that money in tax. I was able to then coordinate this tax strategist along with an attorney and the angel investor client to all together and be able to look at the situation and change the structure that was actually beneficial for the company and the investor. And the investor then was able to be a silent partner in the company, have a 10% ownership, and then the income was going to be able to flow to him as a dividend, not as income, which changed the tax structure. And he ended up getting back about 10%, or he recovered about 2 months per year of income that he was receiving. So wow. He had to pay much less tax. And that's just a really, really simple example of not knowing what was available to him. So he was setting himself up to not be in a good position where he just needed to work with somebody that really understood the tax code and could best leverage that in his situation.
I love it. And we'll dive into taxes in a second, a little bit deeper, but how about we discuss interest before moving on from leaks?
Yeah, that's awesome. I think interest is a really, really powerful one. And this really happens to be all about debt and the way that we think about debt. And what's really interesting here is that most people are really afraid of debt. And I don't know if you picked up on this, but I just noticed that we talked about being afraid of tax and we're afraid of debt. A lot of times as we make decisions in fear, what type of decisions do we make?
Poor ones.
Yeah, poor ones.
100% of the time.
They're limiting. And whenever we're afraid of something, we're running away from something we're afraid of that's not going to empower us. So here's what I want to do just in a brief moment. When it comes to debt, debt is a position of negative equity. And I know I'm sounding like I'm talking financial language. So let me just break this down. Debt is the difference between assets and liabilities. Assets is what you own and liabilities are what you owe. You owe money to somebody. If you take assets minus liabilities, that's your net worth. Well, if that's a negative number, you have more that you owe than what you own, then you're in a position of debt. Now, however, people think, well, I have a mortgage or I have credit cards or I have a business loan or I have student loans. And therefore, because I have this loan, I'm in debt. The real truth is just because you have a liability doesn't mean you're in debt. So this whole fear thing, then just jumping ahead, what ends up happening is that because we have this mindset that I don't want to be in debt, I don't want to be, you know, in a position of being, you know, controlled by someone else or a slave to the lender, you've probably heard as well. The idea is that people then struggle to pay off debt as quickly as possible. And what that ends up doing is having all this extra cash flow that they could be putting in their control going to these financial institutions, the mortgage company, the credit card companies, the student loan lenders, and all of their money is going out of their control because they're putting every extra penny to paying off loans. But really what you want to think about, and this is something that we talk about as we do a financial picture evaluation, as we bring someone into a conversation about finding money leaks, is that we talk about the three C's of financing. And this is really helping you look at cash flow, collateral, and credit, and focusing on how do you maximize each of those. And usually the best way is to be able to have money flowing into your control and not paying off debt as quickly as possible, but instead building up assets. So building up that other side of the financial equation.
Mm-hmm. Let's stick there now that we're there. Talk about the three C's.
Yeah. So cash flow is where we're looking at how much of your money is in your control. Now, when it comes to paying off debt, if you're paying every extra penny and every extra payment to making extra payments or paying off your loans as quickly as possible, that's limiting your cash flow. And actually that has more fixed payments going out of your control. What you want to do is you want to have as little fixed payments as possible. So not only do we want to do that, the collateral means we're building up capital in your control. We're building up your assets. And then credit, you want to build up your credit and your credit score. And the number one way to do that is actually to be able to make your payments on time always. Now, if you had, say, $5,000 a month of fixed payments that are all loan payments that you have to make, you're in a position with a really bad debt-to-income ratio, which is actually not looking good to the lending companies to begin with, but you're more at risk of missing a payment or missing that opportunity to make a payment because you don't have enough cash flow. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do, instead of putting all your extra payments into the mortgage or paying off your house, or we call that putting your money into the four walls of the house, you want to put that in your control. That way, if you ever were in a position with low income or a tight month, you would then be able to have that reserve. You would have a pool of capital to draw from that you could make those payments. Mm-hmm. Is that coming across clearly?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. That. But my question is, the amount that you're eating in interest each month from the amount you would have paid off, you're saying that is offset by the insurance due to, in case some sort of risk or, you know, tragedy occurs.
Correct. You know, this happens all the time, Jordan. People say, but look how much I'm paying in interest. And all things being equal, you don't want to pay interest, all things being equal. But the problem is that when you are putting money, all of your cash flow, and you're paying extra to your house or extra to student loans or extra to credit card payments, and you have no additional cash flow, when something else gets in the way in your life, then you've actually have contributed to a really bad problem where you're going to have to come up with some additional ways to pay for that. Mm-hmm. Well, what ends up happening, if you put it all in your house, then you're going to say, well, I can't get it right now. Now, can you get it out of there? Yes. But you're going to have to ask permission from the bank or mortgage company. Can I have my money back? And they're going to say, why do you want your money back? They're literally going to say that. What do you want it for? You have to prove to us that you can have it back, even though you have done everything contractually that you've said you're going to do. If you put it into their extra payments to the credit card, well, yeah, you can have it back to pay for that emergency by putting more of that payment on a credit card. So you're just putting it more out of your control. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at these different options, we believe it's a lot better to minimize having to use those institutions again and not increase that by having money in your control.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is some of these institutions, like Rachel said earlier, is you have to say, is it better for them or us? I don't know where you live, but where I live, mortgage companies are constantly advertising on, once again, it seems like I'm beating up mortgage companies, but because they serve a role in our society. But you have to ask, you have to think about what you're thinking about. So when they advertise, they say, hey, if you're in a 30-year note, interest rates have decreased. So I can get you in a 15-year note or a 10-year note. You can save all this interest and you don't have to change your payment. So let's refinance and do that. Then later on, they'll come out and say, hey, if you need more money to pay off those credit cards, or if you need more cash flow, let's go ahead and take that 15-year note and let's put it back to 30 so that you have a lower payment every month. They just keep yo-yoing back and forth from 30 to 15, 15 to 30, 30 to 15, 15 to 30. They just keep going back and forth.
Winning on the spread every time?
Yeah, the fees that they're paying every time.
Right.
Let me paint you this picture for you. The biggest thing is they try to say is, you have a 30-year note, we can get you in a 15-year note. And just think about all the interest that you're going to save over your lifetime. Now, if a regular listener to the show says, yeah, that makes perfect sense, I would say to the regular listener, why is the bank or mortgage company trying to help us save interest when that's how they're making their money?
Exactly. That's a great, great first start, like starting point as it's, I mean, it'll make you sound like a cynic or a skeptic, but you're right. They don't get rich by giving you extra money.
No.
That's not why they're the biggest institutions in the world, essentially.
That's right. Well, what they know is they know about the time value of money. So a dollar today is worth more today than it will be in the future. So if they can change you from a 30-year mortgage to a 15-year mortgage, they're going to get more money paid back to them today to then be able to lend out to other people.
Wow.
Once again, I'm all for capitalism. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with this. I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong. I'm just saying that what you're doing, though, is you're giving more control to that bank or lending institution, and you're losing control. So you could do the same thing. You could become your own bank. You could take that extra money and you could go invest it in other cash flowing institutions. Or you could use it instead of using a credit card or using something else that is actually having interest flowing out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all we're trying to preach to people all the time, is to really sit down and try to understand where your cash is flowing and why it's flowing to certain institutions.
I love it.
I'll say there's a couple examples that maybe will make this a little bit more tangible that we have as well. And one was a business client that Bruce had spoken with, and they had a business loan of $250,000 that was amortized over 7 years at 8.5%. And so what was happening is they had $3,900 was going to their home payment, and a second mortgage as well that was amortized over 20 years at 5.25%. That was a total of another $1,600. So what they ended up doing then is restructuring the business loan and increase their cash flow by restructuring that loan by $2,200 per month. And that saved them $27,000 per year.
Wow.
So what we're looking at then is another, we have a couple different situations where somebody was in the ballpark of $170,000 gross income and zero cash flow. So meaning they're having this money come in through their income, through their job, and at the same time, they're not keeping any of it. So what we looked at is saying, well, how can we look at your current loans, whether that was, in both cases, there was student loans, there was home loans, there was auto loans, and how can we refinance the property, the mortgage, stretch out that loan over a longer period of time? We even were able to roll in some other of that non-deductible debt, and then that lower the overall payment, so it increased the cash flow. Yeah, sure, it stretched out the payments over a longer period of time. But what happened is in one case, we were able to increase the cash flow by $20,000 per year. And another one, another similar case, was $36,000 per year.
Wow.
So can you imagine then, okay, maybe you are paying your loans over a longer period of time. However, what can you do with an additional $20,000 or $36,000 per year,
right,
as a result of this restructure? Well, then that's money now you could say, let's put it that into savings. Let's make sure that we have a reserve account that's used for emergencies and opportunities. Then let's figure out what can we invest in that's going to create cash flow. That would buy them a property a year at least. So then that's going to create cash flow for them. They're going to get income from that asset. And instead of just saying, well, hey, let me pay off the mortgage and pay off all the loans as quickly as possible, and then the end of the rainbow of that is just, well, you have a lot of paid off loans. Instead, they can say, well, now I have all this cash flow that I can control, that's in my power than to invest the way I want to. And that at the end of the rainbow creates cash flow.
Okay. I love it. This is amazing. This has got to be the most like action packed financial episode I've ever done.
Wow, that's awesome.
So we're running up against time here and I want to make sure that we get all of your plugs in so everyone can find out about all your wonderful programs. So let me ask you two more questions. First, what is your favorite place to store cash and why?
Awesome. Bruce, do you want to take that one?
Well, Jordan, the first thing I say before I go there is when Rachel and I talk, you should also be asking yourself, what's in it for Rachel and Bruce? You know, I'm not afraid to say that. I tell people all the time, you know, you should be saying, what's in it for Rachel and Bruce? Well, Rachel and Bruce, we have a business too. And one of the places we actually love to store and money, and luckily my mom and dad started this in 1963 for me. And it's well-designed mutual, specially designed life insurance contracts by mutual companies.
Mm.
And the reason we love to store money into well-designed, specially designed life insurance contracts by mutual companies is we cannot lose money. There's guarantees that it will go up and we can not interrupt the compounding effect that you would have by storing money in a bank. And I'm going to have to tell your listeners real quickly. I'll try to tell this to, if you put money in a bank right now, it's not paying hardly any interest. Any interest that you make, it's taxable. And if you use that money to go buy another cash flowing investment, you interrupt the compounding of that money. If you store it in a well-designed, specially designed life insurance contract, you actually don't take your money back out, but because your money is collateral, you actually have an automatic loan provision that you can make against the cash flow or the cash collateral that you have in the life insurance policy.
Mm.
So now you take that loan, you go put it into the cash flowing entity, and you never interrupt the compounding effect of the original money that you put in.
Wow.
Yes, you put in.
I never understood that before.
Yeah. And here's the other benefits that you get. In most states, you get some creditor protection. This is going out, I'm sure, to people all over the United States, so I can't say specifically. But in most states, you also get some creditor protection of the money that's in the life insurance policy. And don't get me wrong, I tell people all the time, this is a life insurance policy. It's just specially designed life insurance policy. So you get that, and oh, you get a death benefit to protect your family if something were to happen.
Right.
So that's where Rachel and I store all our money. And then we use it then to build the money advantage and I buy real estate and so on and so forth. So
wow,
that is where we do. And that's what we teach people. First, we teach people to find the money so that they can live the life and business they love. But then when they find the money, we tell them to actually store it into a specially designed life insurance contract until it's ready to be used on the next cash flowing entity.
I love it. That's really powerful stuff.
I just want to say on that, the reason that it improves your cash flow is that it can be used instead of just having to sit there and accumulate and grow. You can actually leverage that capital to go create cash flow in other cash flowing assets. And it's in your control because it's not going to drop in value and also because you can access it. So it's not tied up. It's not in financial prison where you have to go beg for permission to get access to this money that you've put somewhere. Just because you have the cash value means you have the guaranteed contractual ability to get a loan up to that cash value amount.
The part about not interrupting the compounding interest is something I never really understood until now. So I really love that for some solid, solid advice. Final question. What is your best wisdom on building what you just said, which is a business that you love and a life that you love?
Rachel, let me go first because you're so great at wrapping things up.
Oh, awesome. Go ahead, Bruce.
Here's the thing, Jordan. When you're trying to build the business or the life that you love, you've got to get rid of limiting beliefs.
Mm.
And one of the limiting beliefs is that you're going to work your entire life and then you're going to retire. And then you're going to live the life that you love.
Mm.
Well, why not structure your life right now to live the life that you love? Well, the only way you can do that is if you're in control, in my opinion. So everything you do in your life, you need to be in control. And also, I would say, get this idea of retirement out of your brain. Now, this idea of retirement wasn't really thought of until 1935, coming out of the Great Depression.
Wow.
We had like 25% unemployment. And so the government said, we got to get some of these older people out of the workforce so we can have younger people get into the workforce. So they devised Social Security, and it was structured around a similar structure in Germany.
Wow.
And so that's when retirement, the idea of retirement came about. Before that, people just worked either on the farms or in their businesses.
Worked until they dropped dead.
Right. They worked. And that was part of it, because the life expectancy was about the time that you would start receiving.
Yeah, good point.
Social Security. And that's part of the problem now. Life expectancy was right around 65. Well, now life expectancy is in the late 70s. So that's one of the reasons Social Security cannot keep up with it. So the answer to your question is, we've got to get this ideal of retirement out of our minds.
I love that.
We have to say, we just got to keep contributing to society. But how do we do it? Well, you tell me, how do you want to structure your life to do that? But people have been in this limiting belief. They're afraid. They're afraid that they don't have enough money to retire. Well, why do you want to retire? So I think that's the big thing that I would say, that you need to build the life and business you love by changing your mindset and thinking, why am I even thinking about retiring?
I love that.
Yeah, I'll peg on to that. I would say line up all of your decisions, your financial decisions, towards creating time and money freedom. And what I mean by that is that time freedom comes from financial freedom, because then you don't have to work to be able to survive. But how do you get financial freedom? Well, it's not just having $1 million nest egg or even $5 million nest egg. That's not going to get you there, because you still have to worry about, is it going to lose value in the stock market? What if I want a better lifestyle and I want to use up more of that money? Then what if I run out of money? We don't want to be in a position where we're afraid of running out, because there's that fear again. You want to line up all your decisions so that you have cash flow today and cash flow in the future. And the best way to do that is to have cash flow now that you keep and protect, and that you put into cash flowing assets, so that you know you have that cash flow coming from somewhere besides trading time for dollars. And if you've heard of Robert Kiyosaki, the Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the cash flow game, you're out of the rat race when you're in a position where your income from assets is bigger than your monthly expenses.
Mm.
And that is financial freedom. And then from there, you can figure out, how do I want to use my time to continue on this contribution of giving value back to the world? Because that's really where wealth is created.
Oh, you're speaking my language. We have just a few minutes left. So let's give all the plugs always. The Money Advantage podcast, it's free, it's educational, it's very in-depth, it's high leverage stuff on money mindset, cash flow, all your favorite stuff. Everyone listening to this show, go subscribe to the Money Advantage podcast, found everywhere all the time. Now, talk to me about your Money Advantage programs, the Money Finder and your banking program. Tell me about that.
Yes, well, we have multiple ways that we serve people, and we also have multiple ways that you can find out more before you come talk to us. So I'm going to tell you about those find out more ways first. So one, we have the Money Finder training. You can find that at themoneyadvantage.com/findmoney. I'm also going to give you a text code. That's text FIND, F-I-N-D, to a number 678-506-7543. And Jordan can give that to you in the show notes as well. But if you want to break out of that vicious cycle of just making more money but not getting further ahead, and really be in a position where you keep and control as much of your cash flow as possible, this is the web class for you. So this is going to help you see in a real life example of a person who figured out how to increase their cash flow by plugging those money leaks. So that is the Money Finder training. And then we also have the Quick and Easy Privatized Banking Guide for Investors. And this is actually brand new. We have really packaged this together for somebody who is investing in cash flowing assets. Most of the people we talk to are real estate investors, or they want to get into real estate investing in some way, shape, or form. And if you want to figure out how to use privatized banking to earn a return in two places at the same time, which is going to boost your returns and accelerate time and money freedom for you, this is where you want to be. This is where you want to start. So we're going to show you an example of how it actually doubled investment returns for somebody in this guide and video training. And that is at themoneyadvantage.com/banking, where you can text banking to that same number. And again, Jordan, we can put that in the show notes.
Love it. Guys, thank you so much, both of you. Thanks for taking the time to do this. It's been a pleasure.
Very awesome. Well, thank you so much, Jordan. And I did not say that people can have an opportunity to book a session with us. They're going to find out about it if they jump on our podcast or grab any of the resources that we provide as well.
No problem. Fantastic. Everyone listening, thank you so much for being members. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Jordan River and Bruce and Rachel from the Money Advantage podcast signing off, wishing you a great day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.